break-ins, burglaries, home invasions, squatters. Long gone are the days of not locking the door when you leave your house for the day. Criminals brazenly enter homes that are not theirs and violate the one place we should always feel safe in. The fear of having your home invaded by a stranger has led to many innovations to make it more secure. But do they work? I'm Tim Coleman.
I'm Tyler J. Thomas.
And I'm Jeff Moss. With decades of combined locksmithing and door hardware experience, we will bring our unique perspective to this story. This is The Three Tomers.
Now, security starts at home.
Tuesday, March 1st, 1932. Just after 9 p.m., nurse Betty Gow found that the 20-month-old boy she was in charge of caring for was not with his mother. After calling for the boy's father, they went to the upstairs bedroom. On the windowsill of the second-story room was a ransom note demanding $50,000 and warning the parents not to contact the police or press.
Something bad happening to their child is every parent's worst nightmare. You know, we often get in the habit of thinking that security for a home or even a business is mainly to protect material belongings, but, you know, that's just a byproduct of it in my eyes. Protecting yourself and your loved ones from burglars, kidnappers, murderers, whatever, that is the focus. And the fact that your material belongings are protected in that process are kind of just an added benefit. I will say, especially with small kids, security goes both ways, outside and inside. And what I mean by that is once they start walking, they start exploring. And they're not at that age yet where they can comprehend all the dangers of the world. So you're always worried about elopements. We're almost to the age with our youngest that we can remove all the childproof hardware that we have on the doors and windows around the house. But you know, the things preventing them from wandering outside are excellent. So this dichotomy is going to be a running theme and message throughout this episode. We're going to discuss navigating safety and security at almost every turn, and you're going to find out why.
Hoping to catch the kidnappers, the boy's father began searching the grounds of the estate. Beneath the bedroom window was the ladder that was used to abduct the toddler. Despite the warnings in the ransom note, police were quickly contacted. In addition to the ladder, a chisel was the only other tool found at the scene.
Yeah, so the ladder that was used in this application was homemade. Sure, their commercial ladders were available, but whoever did this made their own out of some wood and dowels and things like that. Based on how things were made back then, a butter knife, a chisel, a flathead screwdriver was probably realistically all they needed to just, you know, slip a latch on the window or pop something open. Mechanisms were not very complicated. You didn't really need much to get past them. You know, homemade stuff like, you know, you would see older tools that when they weren't mass produced, people would make their own stuff for specific jobs. You know, there is some of that still to this day, but that's more of like customization. You know, pretty basic stuff would usually get them in.
The kidnapping of the Lindbergh baby ripped through the headlines across the country. People were asking if the child of the first man to fly across the Atlantic could be taken from a mansion of a house. What would stop their own child from being stolen in the night? Home security at the time was little more than a way to keep honest people out, especially with window locks that could be opened with a butter knife. At the time, Charles Lindbergh was probably the most famous pilot. He was the first to fly across the Atlantic Ocean. Through that, he gained an enormous amount of money through sponsorships and endorsement deals and prize money and all kinds of stuff. So he was very, very wealthy at the time this happened. Saying that, he had a sprawling modern estate for the time. Top of the line, everything, brand new appliances, brand new construction, all of the amenities that you could ever want, but the hardware, the actual security hardware on the doors and windows was still of the time. Even though it was modern and brand new, it could still be defeated very easily. So it's interesting to see how back then, even the best money could not protect his family. In June of 1999, the community of Lower Makefield, Pennsylvania, had a rash of home break-ins. Burglars would strike during the daytime when residents were at work. The way they made entry was simple. They kicked in the door. Usual items that are targets of theft, like computers and electronics, were ignored, and the thieves made off with whatever cash and jewelry they could shove in their pockets. Kicking in the door is the most common way that thieves break into a house. They want to get in quickly. They're not going to pick the lock if they randomly chose the house, which most of the time they don't randomly choose houses. They kind of case out the neighborhood, look and see what gives them cover. They will then go around to a side door or a back door and kick it in to where it's less obvious. Obviously, they don't want somebody driving down the street to see them breaking into a house. They need more time to grab what they can. And once they are inside, they do grab things that are easy to take with them. So they're going to go after your tablets, your laptop computers, any cell phones that are laying around, game consoles, larger items like televisions. They're going to get if they feel comfortable, if they feel that they have enough time and cover to grab those larger items, then they'll do that. Back when this crime happened, televisions, you know, depending on the size, could weigh a few hundred pounds. It's inconceivable today, but, you know, back then, VCRs were large and they were expensive. For thieves to break into the house and take some of these larger items is really just kind of a testament to how dedicated they were to stealing people's stuff. After an evening of playing bingo in August of 1997, cosmetologist June Turner walked inside of her Miami house. When she flipped on the lights, she thought a tornado had gone through her living room. Over 10,000 bucks in electronics and jewelry were gone. June had to go to a neighbor's house to call the cops because the thieves had even stolen her telephones. Her solution to prevent being a victim again was to have a steel door and frame installed, along with a deadbolt lock. Many of the hundreds of victims during the same time made the same decision.
Reinforcing your doors, specifically around the deadbolt and hinges, and the frame is one of the best things you can do to up your home security game. Destructive entry, especially kick-ins as we just heard, are a very common tactic of burglars. So if you can make it very difficult for them, you're very likely to dissuade their attempts after, you know, the third or fourth kick does nothing. The good news is that reinforcing a door or frame is not expensive. I mean, you don't need to run out and buy steel doors because they sell kits and products to reinforce your existing doors and frames, and it only costs around $100 per opening. And on top of that, it's not hard, even for the most inexperienced DIYer, to install them. Reinforcing your door and frame also helps protect against things like prying attacks, so long as it's used in conjunction with a deadbolt. Once that bolt's thrown, it's immovable. I mean, that's why it's called a dead bolt. It becomes dead. You've got a 1-inch bolt thrown into the frame, so it's going to be exceptionally hard for a burglar to pry that open, if at all. They'll damage the door, sure, but the odds are they aren't going to get in. As long as everything's been installed correctly, of course. Ultimately, though, it's best to be proactive and not reactive. You don't want to secure your home after going through what June Turner went through, just like you don't want to buy flood insurance after the flood. You want to go ahead, invest the money, trust me, it's not much, and get the work done. And you'll love the peace of mind it affords you.
With home break-ins on the rise across the country, newspapers ran many articles about how to make your home less attractive to criminals. Many tips included trimming hedges and trees, installing motion-activated spotlights, and being sure your garage door is closed during the day. The most common suggestion, however, is to install deadbolts on your doors, sometimes more than one.
Yeah, and I can remember as a kid they had like block watch, you know, the whole neighborhood watch type of thing, and knowing that this house was safe to go to if there was a problem when you got home, you know, the whole latchkey kid thing. We all sort of grew up in that same era. You know, my parents both worked. I'm an only child, so I didn't stay home when I was real young. I always, you know, went with a grandparent or they picked me up. You know, you still see the signs around for neighborhood watch and things like that, and I don't know that they ever really luckily had to do anything. You know, the police departments are always do crime prevention, whether it's a security survey, you know, driving around. I've mentioned before that if they see your garage door open at 10 o'clock at night or 4 o'clock during the day, even they'll leave a business card and say, hey, we just were driving by, noticed that you left your garage door open. You know, they've been doing stuff on social media saying it's 9 o'clock, make sure your car's locked and your garage, you know, because so many people have been leaving their cars unlocked, which makes these crimes of opportunity, you know, people that I know who left their car unlocked and all their stuff was stolen. So, you know, as locksmiths, you know, we can also offer security surveys, whether it's for commercial or residential. It's not something that we really do often, but while you're at somebody's house, you know, you're there, you're looking at all the openings, you can notice something that may need to be taken care of, something you could recommend that could be done better. You know, I know, like I said, at one time, the city, you could call them, they'd send an officer, help, you know, walk you around your house, show you all the stuff that you that could be done better. I don't know if they still do that, but I know that they are trying to do more with community policing in general.
Sacramento, California, June 2006. A mother answers the front door of her home after hearing a knock. Her sons have friends over all the time, so it's nothing out of the ordinary. She makes the mistake of opening the door without checking to see who it is first. Within seconds, two men armed with handguns hit her and rushed inside. They continued their assault once in the house and even threatened to kill her dog. Out of fear, she gave in to their demands and opened her safe, where the criminals took jewelry, collectibles, and cash before they stole her car and made their getaway. Home invasion robberies have now taken a violent turn.
So, you know, today, doorbell cameras are very inexpensive, which have voice and video intercom built into them. Those are, you know, a few hundred bucks. There are annual subscriptions, you know, to be able to play back video and stuff like that. But just to use it and see what's going on, you don't have to pay for the software. You know, peepholes, the door scopes, which we use a lot in commercial applications, or it's like a 2-inch hole in the door. Something is better than just opening the door blindly. You know, a peephole is 15 bucks. You don't have to necessarily spend $200 on a ring or a doorbell camera or a whole alarm system. There are different options out there.
February 2015. At around 1:30 a.m., the quiet of an elderly woman's house in the 9000 block of 51st Avenue in Oaklawn, Illinois, was shattered when a man forced the front door open. The 86-year-old had awakened moments before her door came crashing in and had already started towards the door when the criminal confronted and assaulted her. Although suffering only minor injuries, the woman's sense of security in her home was shattered. Although police never release an official means as to how the invader gained entry, reports in the Chicago Tribune indicated that the door was kicked in. So again, kicking in the door is the most common means for criminals to gain entry to your house. And where we come in as security experts is we know exactly what type of hardware to use and how to install it properly. For your deadbolts, that includes using an extra thick strike plate, which is the plate that is on the door frame. and it is a lot thicker than just a decorative one. Also, we use 3-inch long screws that go into the studs. So when a criminal tries to kick that door, they're going to have to dislodge those screws, that plate, and everything through the entire frame of the door, making it much more difficult for people to enter your house. 10 months later, and hundreds of miles east of Chicago, a 17-year-old was arrested and held on $3 million bail after entering a 38-year-old woman's home during the night, strangled her, beat her, and sexually assaulted her. The victim of the attack had a handgun in her nightstand, but was choked unconscious before being able to reach it, and the perpetrator stole it. Thankfully, police linked him to the crime through DNA and were also able to take him off the street without any more violence. At the same time, burglars got creative and smashed through cinder blocks to force a deadbolt inward to get inside a pizza restaurant in Manchester, Connecticut.
Where there's a will, there's a way. I mean, you'll never make something impenetrable, but as we've said in countless previous episodes, you want to make things as tough as possible and prolong the burglar's attempts in hopes that they either give up or they're discovered. Smashing cinder blocks and smashing a deadbolt inside, it's not a 5-minute deal. It's not probably not a 10-minute deal. But they had, I presume this was on the backside of the restaurant, they had enough time and enough cover to do it.
In 2007, foreclosure rates had begun to skyrocket in the U.S. With the economic downturn, more properties were left vacant than had been in decades prior. At first, mortgage companies were concerned with little more than breaking even on their money. But over time, they became increasingly worried about people living in the houses free of charge. Most states have laws protecting renters from unfair landlord practices, but at the same time, they also protect squatters. If a house is vacant and someone breaks in and starts living there, the laws force the property owner to go through all the legal channels of evicting that person, even though they never paid a penny in the first place. By 2024, squatting has been making a comeback. Unlocked windows, keys hidden on the property, and poor mindfulness has led to an entirely new movement on and into vacant houses.
Selling a home that is vacant can be very stressful. I mean, selling a home already stressful enough, but being away from it during the process adds even more stress to it. You have to worry about things like people squatting, people breaking in to steal the copper pipes, or kids just breaking inside to graffiti and tear stuff up for fun. That actually happened at the last home I lived in. They tossed paint all over the garage and graffitied the basement. And, you know, the cleanup delayed our move in by about 2 weeks. So I've seen that before. So how do you protect a vacant home? Well, to start with, you should probably be doing what you're already doing with your current home, hopefully, but with a few minor tweaks. You know, you want to keep that alarm system active when you're not there. You want to keep all the windows and doors locked whenever somebody's not there. Beyond that, you want to maintain an appearance that the home is occupied, even when it isn't. You want to visit the property as regularly as possible. If that's not possible, maybe you're out of state, ask a neighbor, a friend, or relative nearby to check on things for you. You want to do this so you can do things like get the mail, collect any newspapers or flyers left in the driveway. In my neighborhood Facebook group, there's a post a week about a package being delivered to the wrong house. So by visiting the property regularly, if a package showing up on your doorsteps unexpected, at least you're there to intercept it and remove it, take it to the rightful owner or whatnot, but you just don't want something that you didn't anticipate being there, staying there, thereby giving the impression that, hey, nobody's home. If you've got a lawn service, don't discontinue it. I mean, that's gonna help with selling it anyway. You want a nice, neat yard, but an unkempt yard doesn't scream, hey, somebody's here. Taking it a step further, if you've got some sort of smart home system or can invest in something as simple as a timer, you can use those to cycle lights on and off, again, to give the appearance that somebody's at home. You got a friend or neighbor nearby, ask them to park one of their cars in the driveway. Again, just anything you can think of to maintain an appearance that the home is occupied is going to bode well for the security.
In August of 2015, in an exclusive neighborhood of Charlotte, a woman and several others broke into a vacant house that was on the market. Members of the Homeowners Association alerted their private security company to the squatters. After attempts by realtors and police alike to have her leave the 5,200 square foot house peacefully, a months-long legal battle ensued. Eventually, the suspect left and was convicted in court on several counts of trespassing and breaking and entering, among other charges. At the time of this story, I was actually working in the Charlotte area, and this story was on the news quite a bit. Several of the local TV stations ran it, newspapers ran articles on it, and it carried on, and I think it was probably the highest profile case of squatting at the time, because this neighborhood is a gated neighborhood. There are million-dollar houses, multi-million-dollar houses, NFL players, national celebrities, singers, all lived within this neighborhood. So to have this going on really stirred up some trouble. So interesting, because the woman who was squatting in there actually had her children living there as well, and they attended a local school. Now, how she got in, I don't know. We never were able to figure out exactly her means of entry. Was it a lockbox for the realtor on the front door? Was it a door that was left unlocked? We don't know. But she made entry. Once she made entry, she apparently had the locks rekeyed, because the key would never work. The original key didn't work. When she was approached by police, after the initial complaints, she produced a false lease. It was obviously false, but that was her legal documentation, along with receiving mail at the location in her name, showing her child's school registration with that address as the child's home address. And so the person who owned the property had to go through this long and drawn out legal process. The way that the laws work in North Carolina is certain papers have to be issued and served on the person within a certain number of days. And once that's complete, then the process can move forward. But if you can't actually confront the person and serve them with the paperwork, then you have to pretty much start all over. And that's what helped drag this entire event out over months and months, probably why it made so much news. That and the neighborhood it was located in. As incidents of home invasions and squatting increase, security professionals like locksmiths are also seeing increases in business. Realtors are having houses rekeyed, and new homeowners are having doors and windows fixed and secured.
So yeah, I mean, obviously we recommend you get your locks rekeyed after moving in, somebody moving out, divorce, a breakup, somebody has a key that shouldn't. It's not that expensive, considering, you know, when people come and say, oh, I need my locks replaced. And what they usually mean is they need them rekeyed. They typically don't need new hardware. I'm not going to sell them new hardware when they don't need it. Generally speaking, they just want, in customer parlance, they want the tumblers retumbled. You know, $10 to $15 per lock if you bring it in is pretty reasonable.
In many of the home security improvement articles across the country's newspapers during the 1990s, a common theme was to recommend double-cylinder deadbolts. These deadbolts require a key to both get in and get out. Fire codes have changed in recent years, though, to reflect the dangers of these locks, and glass manufacturers have improved materials to make them more resistant to breakage.
It's always going to be a balance between security and life safety, always. I mean, your goal is to strive for security that doesn't impede life safety, and life safety that doesn't impede security. Fortunately, new products and hardware items are being developed and brought to market that help balance things. You know, things like smart home software and hubs that coordinate efforts between smoke alarms and alarm systems, and smart lock or window security film that can protect against somebody trying to smash your window while also cutting down on the UV rays entering a home, thus saving you on energy costs. Whatever it is, new or old, the principles pretty much stay the same. You want to make it hard for the bad guys to get in, and you want to make it easy for people to get out when they need to.
Since the early days of human history, people have had places they called home. These homes not only contain our food and possessions, they are where we feel safe and comfortable and secure enough to close our eyes and go to sleep. Although we have the occasional nightmare, the right application of locks and hardware can keep those nightmares from coming true.
Executive producer is Tyler J. Thomas. Technical producer is Jeff Moss. Writer and editor is Tim Coleman.
Find additional resources and source material on our website, freetumblers.com.
This has been a Three Tumblers production. Copyright 2024, all rights reserved.